another slight eyebrow lift from Big. Little assured me that they'd speak with Dr. Vreeland, and Big said that they'd start talking to my neighbors, see if anyone suspicious had been hanging around. Big wanted to know whether anyone had directly made a threat against Sadie or me, if I'd had any negative run-ins, and I said no, everyone had seemed lovely. To my face. "It's a great neighborhood," Little said, with the most feeling either of them had shown, and I had a sinking sensation. Even though I stressed again that the bacteria was rare, that the virus showed up most often in people working with livestock, Big asked, "Do any of your neighbors have dogs?" And I knew I was fighting a losing battle. They clearly didn't believe anyone in the AV would do something like this. I had the sense that their investigation would be cursory at best. Though they were unfailingly polite, I was pretty sure they'd laugh at me later. Maybe they'd even call Wyatt to let him in on the joke. I decided not to even fill Doug in when he came home. He'd just find a way to dismiss me, too, to downplay everything. I'm on my own. I can't sleep in the bed with him, not after everything. So I'm lying on the love seat, staring up at the ceiling. My mind is spinning like Sadie's mobile. I go back to Big's final question.
"Is there anyone you've wronged? Anyone who could be holding a grudge against you?"
I hear a noise outside, and there's Yolanda, pushing her double stroller. It's definitely odd, since it's 10 at night. Shouldn't her kids be in their beds, sleeping? Though the ground is flat, she seems to be huffing. I think she's put on more weight since I last saw her, or it could just be the unflattering shorts she's wearing. Without thinking, I dash outside. I plant myself directly in her path. Her hair is pulled back severely in a bun, and she's not wearing any makeup. She looks aged.
"Oh," she says without a smile, "you're back."
Sadie was discharged.
"Congratulations."
She starts to push the stroller around me. Her kids are asleep. I might not get a more perfect moment. If Yolanda's behind all this, then I need to call a ceasefire. Even though she hates me now, the notes started way before whatever it was that happened with Wyatt the day of the block party. I have to start somewhere. "I'm glad I ran into you," I say. I take a deep breath. I wanted to say I'm truly sorry for what happened at girls' night with Wyatt. Her face goes from stony to stormy. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even remember it. I only found out when I saw a picture on my phone.
"You expect me to believe that?"
I was blacked out that night. Someone slipped me a roofie. I'm positive. Someone in this neighborhood has had it out for me since I moved here. They leave me hateful notes. She shakes her head angrily.
"This is the story you're going with?"
"It was a kiss," I say, "nothing else."
"How do I know that?"
"Well, what did Wyatt tell you?" She looks away.
"He doesn't remember what happened that night either. But he's pretty sure it was just a kiss."
"Wyatt doesn't want me, and I don't want him. Doug and I aren't going to be open," she snorts.
"You could have fooled me."
Is that a reference to Doug and Andy? "I'm not going to be a regular. I'm not going to put myself in that position ever again. You have nothing to worry about." She looks directly at me, trying to figure out if she should keep hating me. I can tell she's vilified me in her own mind in order to be able to live with Wyatt. I get that. All the compromises, all the rationalizations, all the little mental tricks we do just to get through the day and have what we thought we'd always wanted. "I am so sorry," I say again. "There was never anything between Wyatt and me, I swear to you. We never even flirted. Someone put ketamine in my drink. That makes people overly sexual." She's dubious, but then I see her dawning realization that this could work in her favor.
"Do you think someone could have drugged Wyatt, too?"
"I don't know. Maybe."
"Unbelievable," she says,
but I can tell she's a little relieved. like maybe there's another way to let Wyatt off the hook.
Thanks for hearing me out. She starts to push the stroller away and then says, You're better off.
What do you mean?
Opting out.
What she doesn't know is that I'm the one opting out. I'm just not sure if my husband is.
Chapter 34. I creep outside at 4 a.m. while Doug sleeps on peacefully down the hall from Sadie. He should be tossing and turning, his slumber fitful and disturbed. Even if he's not an adulterer, he must know that he's appearing to be an adulterer, with his disappearances and his emotional distance. I will deal with my marriage at some point. I have to. We're Sadie's parents, and what we do will inevitably affect her. But right now, I have to stay focused. There was an attempt on Sadie's life, and the perpetrator is still out there, needing to be stopped. Many of the couples on this block are wealthy. Wealth buys access. It can also buy secrecy. Vic and Tennyson, Oliver and Gina, Nolan and Andy, Brandon and Stone, they could all afford to do it and to cover their tracks afterward. Yolanda and Wyatt don't seem nearly as rich, but Wyatt might have contacts through the police force. Obtaining leptospirosis is not out of the realm of possibility for my neighbors if they wanted it badly enough. But the motives, that's where it's murky. I've barely seen Vic, and I imagine he has his hands full with the spreadsheet. The idea of my being a threat to Tennyson is fairly laughable. Oliver and Gina, that they hate to lose and that Doug and I got Crayola. Brandon and Stone, no way. Just no way. Nolan and Andy. Andy. She wants my husband. I'm standing in the street, and now it's 4:12 a.m., and I'm quaking. I'm dealing with an attempted murderer here. If I get caught, what will he or she do next? Whoever it is must be on alert. I basically announced on Good Neighbors that I was planning to strike back. How I wish I hadn't written that, and I still had the element of surprise. But I am where I am. The police won't do much without hard evidence, and they're not going to look very hard for evidence. That much was clear. So as frightened as I am, I need to be just as determined as my enemy. This is for Sadie. I start with the cans across the street. I'm wearing a pair of bright yellow kitchen gloves, the kind you'd normally use to wash dishes, and I quickly develop a method for searching. Raquel and Bart, Oliver and Gina, Brandon and Stone, Wyatt and Yolanda, Vic and Tennyson, one after the other. Just for good measure, I check inside the can of the old crone, Gladys. There's not even one trash bag in there. Huh. She's not really on my suspect list, and the rest are, for lack of a better word, clean. It's just the ordinary paper trail and detritus of life. I don't care about the processed foods my neighbors hide or their brand of personal lubricant. I don't care about their fungus cream, their stool softener, their Viagra, their probiotic pills, their Rogaine, their facial lotions and potions. Brandon takes Ativan. Yolanda takes Prozac. They see the same psychiatrist. But that hardly seems like a smoking gun. I don't have time for garden variety snooping. I'm looking for something very specific, though I can't say precisely what that is. Like porn. I'll know it when I see it. Gina and Oliver's papers are shredded. Everyone else has their bills, paycheck stubs, canceled checks, and other financial documents right out there for anyone to see. The numbers are often astounding. I'm amazed that anything legal can yield that kind of return. But it's confirmation that my neighbors have the means to obtain anything, including that virus. Not that that'll convince the police to do their jobs. I mean, wouldn't it have made the most sense for them to start questioning my neighbors yesterday, since they were already on the block? Instead, they just got in their cruiser and drove away, and I'm not sure when they'll be back.
Despite what they heard about the poisoning of a baby, they clearly feel no urgency. I need to create that urgency. I cross the street and visit Andy and Nolan's house. When I open their trash can, the stench of dirty diapers assaults my nostrils and almost prohibits me from going further. Almost. I steel myself and paw through. No bills or financial documents, no embarrassing Twinkies. It's like they want to make sure their garbage is of the highest quality. Everything organic, quinoa, spelt, high-fiber bread, sugar-free and low-salt marinara sauce. Their nutritionist must be proud. No cheating on their diets here. There are some Q-tips and cotton balls, but no old jars of moisturizer or other products. Diapers notwithstanding, they're keeping it classy, those two. Well, three, counting Fisher. I close the lid. I move back toward home and stop at Val and Patrick's, leaving no stone unturned. If Val's garbage is any indication, it seems like there's nothing she won't try to keep her weight low and the wrinkles at bay. Empty containers from detoxing fasts, supplements, and shakes. Plus creams and supposed miracle products from QVC abound. Meanwhile, Patrick just has a can of old-style shaving cream from Gillette. The double standard of men's and women's aging is on full display. I glance toward June's house. I don't want to snoop on my new best friend, the one person I've come to count on, since I can't seem to count on Doug these days. But I need to be thorough, for Sadie's sake. At first, it's going well. There's nothing incriminating in the garbage. It's just goth makeup, hope stuff, and auburn hair extensions, June, and food wrappers and sundries. I'm about to turn back toward my own house, satisfied, when some sixth sense tells me to look in the recycling. That's where I see the dining room chair cardboard. What's left of it? I try to think of any other explanation for it being here weeks later, anything besides June being the author of the notes. When I told her about them, she acted surprised. Now she's getting rid of the evidence, a day after the police were here. Their squad car was right in front of my house, so either she saw it, or someone told her, with the AV being what it is. If she was scared of getting caught, does that mean it's over? Or will she just move on to some new way of terrorizing me? Or could she have had a change of heart after all this time? None of it makes any sense. She's been the only thing keeping me going, besides Sadie herself. She took care of me. I cried in her arms. She understood because she went through it with Hope all those years ago. She volunteered to be with me day after day. She was by my side, on my side. I could feel it. She hated that Sadie was in pain. I know she did. I felt it. Could someone else have put the cardboard in her recycling to frame her? They all told me how transparent I was, like it was an endearing quality. Maybe I telegraphed my next move in that good neighbor's message. The real perpetrator is one step ahead of me. My first AV best friend is probably sleeping with my husband. My second AV best friend may very well have poisoned my daughter. It can't be true. It can't. I go back over each conversation June and I had, as best I can remember it, and yes, she asked a lot of questions, but I thought she was just trying to understand me better. Or she wanted to find out things she could use against me. But why? How could someone I'd never met before hate me so much? She sent me only one text since I've been home, asking how Sadie was. I told her, and then she didn't respond. I thought, just for a second, how strange it was that June would spend all that time with me at the hospital, only to disappear once Sadie was out of the woods. She was there when I was at my most vulnerable. By design. Because it served her, somehow. Some part of me just can't believe it, though. June? I felt like I'd known her forever. Like I could trust her with my life and Sadie's life. How could I have been so wrong?
The last day at the hospital, there was something about the glow in her eyes when I talked about Crayola, the way she wanted me to leave Doug rather than fight for my marriage. That glow didn't care. It just wanted me gone. But I saw how she looked at Sadie. I saw the tears in her eyes. Could anyone possibly be that good of an actress? Maybe she meant to hurt me, not Sadie. The leptospirosis was meant for me, and when she saw Sadie there, those were tears of guilt. I could call the police and tell them that the cardboard's in June's recycling, but they're not going to make it here before the recycling truck does. It's already less than a block away. I could take a picture or take the cardboard out of June's recycling, but it'll really just be my word against hers. She'll deny it, of course. I know she's an excellent liar. The neighborhood will take her side. She'll have a block full of character witnesses, one of them a cop, and I'll have nobody. Maybe not even my own husband. I need to turn the tables somehow. I just can't let her or anyone else know that I'm onto her. The AV is where people know everything about their neighbors, where there are no secrets. So somewhere on this block, someone must have the goods on June. They have what I need. I'll just have to get it out of them. Chapter 35. Doug told me that his manager gave him the day off today, after seeing yesterday just what a toll everything has taken on him. Another lie, but I'm not going to call him on it right now. I don't have the energy for a come-to-Jesus conversation about our marriage. What matters right now is protecting Sadie, and the fact that he's inside, sleeping, with her down the hall means I can start my mission. I'm going to level the playing field. June thinks she knows me. Well, I'm about to get to know the real her, and why she's after me. At 7 a.m., I start going door-to-door with my petition. Ostensibly, it's to increase funding for children's hospitals. Really, it's to get samples for a handwriting analysis. The notes are my only real clue. I imagine that no one will check whether Proposition 29 is for real. No one reads fine print. I figure it's early enough that everyone's up and getting ready. I plan to knock as insistently as everyone else does in the AV. Raquel steps outside in a robe, closing the door behind her. I go into my spiel, explaining what great care Sadie received and how everyone should be able to get the same care, regardless of their economic means. Raquel doesn't listen or ask for any particulars, and she signs without hesitation, telling me how happy she is that Sadie's all right.
I was so worried.
Then she grabs me in an impromptu hug. I thank her and extricate myself quickly, asking if Bart is home and would be willing to sign.
Of course he'd sign, but are you okay? Like, really okay?
She's studying me with concern. Sure, I'm fine. I try to assemble my face into the appropriate expression.
Because I saw your post.
Shit. The good neighbor's post. I hadn't exactly forgotten about it, but I have no prepared response. Seeing how tongue-tied I am, Raquel says softly,
I know how it is. When you see your child sick, it can play tricks on your mind.
That's what it was, I agree immediately. Everything with Sadie was so stressful, and I think I just misread some things. Read into them, I mean.
I have the best therapist. Do you want her name?
I can just imagine the good neighbor's post about that. All the folks in the neighborhood recommending their own therapists. Who does June see? Is baby poisoning confidential? Maybe, I say.
Well, you'll let me know.
She smiles at me with something like affection. Then she tells me she'll get Bart so he can sign too. I'd almost forgotten I was holding the clipboard. She goes back into the house, and when she emerges, Bart is with her.
So sorry you went through that, he says, but happy to hear your little one is all right.
It's the most I've ever heard him speak. His cadence is polite and formal, almost like a military man on leave.
Make sure you print on this line, I point, and sign on this one. All the notes were printed. I figure it doesn't hurt to get handwriting samples from the whole block in case I'm wrong about June. In case someone else, say, put the dining room chairs in her bin to frame her. It's a long shot, but I've always been cursed with hope. June was such a help while I was at the hospital, I say. I want to get her a thank you gift. Do you know what kinds of things she likes? Raquel and Bart look at each other with identical thinking expressions. Then they start to laugh at I don't know what. They actually seem, bizarrely enough, like a good couple.
I'm not sure, Bart says. Sweetie, what do you think?
She's got so much hope drama. Maybe a massage?
That's a great idea, I say. Do you know if her ex-husband helps at all? Raquel shakes her head.
Total loser.
Really? That's too bad.
Yeah, it is. I love June. She deserved better than that guy.
Bart casts her a sideways glance.
He was all right. He was more blue-collar than the other guys around here.
So blue-collar guys stick together. Raquel exclaims,
He was all right? June let him have everyone on the block, and then he still went and had an affair with someone he worked with. Then he left her with hope, and no emotional or financial support. And he cancels half the weekends he's supposed to take her.
Bart chuckles.
Okay, okay, you win.
His eyes stray across the street.
I don't know how she gets by. I never got how they afforded that house to begin with, and she hasn't gone back to work. It's like she has a sugar daddy or something.
At that, I notice that something in Raquel's face closes off, like Bart said too much.
We should get back to breakfast, Raquel says. So glad Sadie's better and that you're home. You just need to catch up on your sleep. That'll make a world of difference. Hey, maybe you and June can get massages together.
Maybe, I say. Gina and Oliver are pleasant, brisk, and efficient. They sign with little fanfare, like people with nothing to hide.
We've got to get the kids ready, Gina says.
Then, before she turns away,
Do you want to come out for girls' night tomorrow? Same time, usual place?
Didn't she see what I posted on Good Neighbors? If she didn't, someone must have told her. So the invitation is pretty weird. It's like she wants fireworks. She wants a powder keg of crazy in their midst.
You probably haven't even had a chance to consider, she says, with everything that's been going on.
Consider. Then I realize she means the openness. I still haven't officially opted out.
We'd still love to have you as a regular. Come out tomorrow night, okay?
I don't know, I say. I'll have to talk to Doug. We haven't really had a chance to think about much other than Sadie. She smiles briefly. I see how sad her eyes are. Oliver puts his arm around her in a perfunctory way, and then that door is swinging shut, too. Stone and Brandon are up next. Brandon is his usual voluble self.
I wish I could have done more for you while you were in the hospital, he tells me as he scrawls his name. I felt like the worst neighbor in the world.
I appreciate how you respected my wishes. We just needed to be together as a family.
I can understand that,
Stone says, taking the petition from me.
See you around, I hope.
It's an odd question. I'm right across the street, but maybe not that odd, given the Good Neighbors post. I smile back at him, and then he withdraws into the house. Brandon stays where he is. Perfect.
Did someone really leave you notes?
He asks. They really did. But I probably blew them out of proportion. They were just like, don't park your car in my spot.
But they were anonymous?
I nod.
Must have been Gladys then.
With Sadie being sick and Oliver next to Stone, I just started to dabble in some conspiracy theories. He lets out a delighted laugh.
That must be it.
Then he lowers his voice and leans in.
No one else could have done it except for Gladys. I know everything that goes on around here. No one can keep a secret. Not from me, anyway.
He sounds a little bit territorial and a little bit proud.
We're good people on this block. Flawed, sure. And quirky, what with the openness and all, but good.
I kind of wish you'd been the one to come to the hospital instead of June, I say. You would have made me laugh. I have the sense that his currency is flattery.
I wish I could have gone too, but honestly, I can't stand those places. I smell that disinfectant, and I'm reminded of the super germs they're trying to kill. So when June volunteered, I was relieved.
There's a funny quality to him, like guilt with some additive I can't quite place. She did a good job, though, I say. He nods, and that's all. In my admittedly limited interactions with him, Brandon never just nods. You don't like June? I ask.
It's not that. It's just...
He leans in and lowers his voice again.
I think her husband told her some things about me that weren't true, and she believed them, and it's never been the same between us.
What kind of things?
He looks left and right exaggeratedly, like the shifty eyes of a picture in an old episode of Scooby-Doo. He wanted to be dominated, but only by a man. He was into it, but he made it sound to her like I was somehow forcing myself on him.
Brandon makes a face.
Some people just don't want to own what they're into. It doesn't fit with their image of themselves. Sexuality can be a messy, ugly thing, and I'm okay with that. But he definitely wasn't.
I hear he wasn't such a great guy.
Really? June said that?
No, Raquel said it.
I was hoping June was finally ready to admit it and file for divorce. They've been separated for years now. She deserves better.
It's clearly the party line. He looks over my shoulder, and then he does this theatrical sort of ducking down like he's hiding behind me.
Niels again, he explains.
What?
Niels drives around just to get a look at me. He's like this lovesick puppy. I should never have gotten involved with him. I had a suspicion he was closeted.
Niels? As in Niels and Ilsa?
As in the people who used to live in your house. I was so glad when Ilsa insisted they move away. At least now it takes him some work to stalk me. Before, it was way too easy. He'd just walk out his front door and ta-da!
I'm trying to think how to get the conversation back on track, back to June, when he says he really needs to go.
Don't tell June I said anything about her husband, okay? He says.
I won't. Thanks for signing the petition.
Anytime. Love to Sadie.
So June had a bad marriage to a bad man who she tries to believe is good. She may have a sugar daddy, and I know she has a daughter who's out of control. But what does any of that have to do with me?
Tennyson answers her door next, her hair unkempt, in a robe loosely belted over a black satin negligee.
Vic goes to the gym at the ass crack of dawn every day, but I know he'd want to sign this, she says. Come back in an hour?
She writes her name and scribbles an absolutely unreadable signature beside it. Then she hands me the clipboard with a huge smile.
Now that we've got that out of the way, let's get down to business.
I look at her nervously.
Is Sadie really and totally better? Please say yes.
I relax and smile. Yes. She just needs to drink lots of milk and get lots of sleep, but it's a full recovery.
I can't wait to see her. Can you take her out of the house yet? Like, could you bring her over to the park today? It'd be great to catch up.
Not quite yet, but I'll let you know.
So, someone's harassing you? She says conversationally. Who do you think it is?
Of the three neighbor reactions to my post, this one seems strangest. Raquel assumed I was having some sort of breakdown. Brandon assumed it was Gladys. But Tennyson seems to find it not only plausible, but a general topic for conjecture. It's like she was completely oblivious to the panicked tone of the post. A woman with her back against the wall, coming out swinging. For the first time, it occurs to me. Tennyson is sort of narcissistic. She doesn't seem to feel what other people feel. She's not malicious, she's simply unaware. She's got her spreadsheet, and the block orbits around her, and she's perfectly happy. I don't know who it is, I say. That's why I put the post up. Do you have any ideas? She cocks her head and gives me a coy smile. Depends. Who've you been sleeping with? Then she lets out a big laugh. Just kidding. We're still waiting for you to give us an answer. Are you in or are you out? Doug and I have been kind of busy. We haven't really made a decision. Which way are you leaning? No, wait, don't tell me. Just give us another chance to convince you. Tomorrow night, we're going back to Hound for another girls' night. I'll think about it. She winks. That's right. Play hard to get. I start to head down her front steps, looking up and down the street, debating my next destination. I don't see Yolanda's car, but Wyatt's is there. The last thing I want is for word to get back to her that I was interacting with Wyatt alone. I feel like Yolanda and I are at a détente after our talk last night, and I don't want to jeopardize it. I also want to avoid Andy's house, but I can't anymore. I need to get that handwriting sample and rule her out. Or in. I knock on the door of their immense tutor, remembering how intimidated I once was by her, for an entirely different reason. I recall that first dinner, and her awe-inspiring kitchen ceiling, and her breathtaking dining room, and all that talk about Fisher's adoption that felt both spontaneous and intimate. Did she know then that she wanted Doug? Did she already know she was going to betray me? Here, I say coldly. I shove the petition at her. It's for Children's Hospital. Print and sign. How is Sadie adjusting to being home? Her tone is sweet, like she won't even dignify my rudeness. She takes the clipboard and signs quickly, like she has nothing to hide. You must be in heaven having her back. I can't make pleasantries with her after everything. Is Nolan here? I need all the signatures I can get. He is, but he's upstairs in his office, in the middle of a conference call. She signed, but she doesn't seem very eager for him to do the same. I'll wait and catch him on his way out. What time does he leave for work? He's working from home today. I stare her down. She needs to know I'm not just some pushover. I'm Sadie's mother and Doug's wife, and both of those mean something. I'm passionate about this, Andy. I'm going to get that signature. So when will he be available? I'll keep coming back. She splits my eardrums with a sudden yell. Nolan, come here! He appears relatively quickly, a piece of half-eaten toast in his hand. She lied. He wasn't upstairs on a conference call. He was in the kitchen. How are you, Kat? I realize that he's the first person who led with that, rather than asking about Sadie. He seems like he genuinely wants to know. If our spouses are sleeping with each other, that's got to be a certain kind of bond. Just happy to be home and to have Sadie home. What do you have here? I hand him the clipboard, and he's the first one to read it. He hesitates, the pen in hand, and then he looks at me curiously. I get the funny feeling he knows it's a bunch of hooey. I gaze back at him like a woman with nothing to hide. He prints and signs, then returns the clipboard. Seems like a worthwhile measure, he says. I hope it makes the ballot. Andy is standing a little bit behind him. She seems subdued. Chastened, I hope. Thanks, I say. No, thank you, Nolan says. And I don't know what he means, but he sounds friendly and sincere, so I'll take it. And run. I've saved June for last. Her car is there, and so is her daughter's. Yet I bang, and ring, and no one answers. Strange that she'd avoid me, since as far as she knows, I think she's my AV soulmate. That's what I told her, back when I meant it. Maybe they're just heavy sleepers. I'll go back later. Inside my own home, Doug and Sadie are still asleep. I linger an extra minute in Sadie's room, stroking her hair with the lightest of touches, like a present I'm giving myself. Then I force myself to leave. I can't risk disturbing her. She needs her rest. I go back downstairs. Since I can't get the most likely suspect's handwriting sample yet, I might as well inspect what I do have. I lay the one remaining note out in front of me and hold the petition in my lap. At first glance, none of their handwriting matches. No one's printing is neat enough, but the notes are block letters and no one printed their name that way. Also, they could be writing in a different style to throw me off. I Google forensic handwriting analysis and try again. I'm looking for differences first, at the amount and degree of slant, at the spacing between letters and words, and at the shapes. Still nothing. This could just mean, by process of elimination, that June wrote all the notes. She acted alone, that's all. Everyone else is in the clear, which is good news. It's just one bad apple. But somehow, I don't think so. Because she didn't even check who was at her door. I know she's an early riser because she told me that during our very first conversation. When she mentioned how early the trash pickup is, and because she welcomed me to good neighbors before sunrise. She's up. I know she is. Someone must have texted her and told her not to answer the door. They might have told her I'm on to her, that I'm coming for her just like I posted on Good Neighbors. Because normal people don't ignore someone that insistent. Normal people are at least curious as to who needs to see them that badly at 7:40 a.m. I go to the window and look out at the street, hoping for some inspiration, willing the next step to come to me. And that's when I see Hope heading for her car. I don't like the idea of manipulating someone's child, but June may have poisoned mine. Besides, Hope's a teenager, a rebellious one, I've heard, and I've got to try to use that to my advantage. "Hi," I say as Hope's hand is on the driver's door of her Audi. "We've never officially met. I'm Kat, your neighbor." "I know. I'm Hope." She doesn't make eye contact or smile. Her hand's still on the door, but she hasn't opened it, so that's something. "Good to meet you. Your mother's told me all about you." Actually, June's said practically nothing about Hope in all our time together, and next to nothing about herself. I didn't even realize how solipsistic all our conversations had been. "She said when you were little, you were in the same hospital as Sadie." Hope makes a noise of obvious contempt. What doesn't she lie about? "You were never in a hospital?" I glance up at the house to see if June's by a window, watching us. We seem to be in the clear, but I still have to act fast. Hope shakes her head, disgust splashed across her features. Those features. They're strangely familiar. I've never seen Hope up close before, and I peer at her, trying to see beyond the mime white face paint and the heavy eyeliner and the red lipstick. I know this girl, don't I? I stare at her, and she stares back with bold annoyance. It's the first time I've really looked into her eyes, and now there's no mistaking it. I looked into those eyes a million times when I was growing up. Those are Ellen's eyes. Then I'm seeing June's face in my mind, despite all the times she shifted so that her hair was partially covering it. I can see Ellen's face, with some sort of time-lapse photography like she's on a milk carton. And I superimpose and cross-reference and... yes, there's been some surgery, definitely her nose and probably her chin, and could they have done something to her cheekbones, or is her face just that much thinner? And colored contacts, but some essential Ellen-ness remains. I was just too self-obsessed and too Sadie-obsessed to see it. Yet I must have sensed it. Because when I sat with June at the hospital, there was this feeling of comfort right away.
We were capable of companionable silence of a sort that usually takes years to achieve. And I opened up to her so easily, in a way I never would have ordinarily. I thought it was just the circumstances, but it was something else. Something more. Some part of me felt like the woman in front of me was someone I'd known forever. Because I had. After all these years, Ellen and I found each other. "Are you, like, having a seizure or something?" Hope asks. She looks like she really wants to get the hell away from me, but she's making sure I'm okay first. So there's some decency in her. She might be wayward, but June raised her better than everyone thinks. "Sorry, it's just... I was knocking on your door a little while ago. Did you hear it?" "Yeah. Mom said not to answer it. She said it was someone trying to sell us something. But then she's always ridiculously nervous about things like that. Stranger danger." Hope is clearly mocking her mother. Does she know anything about Ellen's history? Does she know her mother's real name? Who her grandfather is? "I wanted your mom to sign a petition for funding for Children's Hospital. They took such good care of Sadie." "So Sadie's okay now?" Hope's concern proves she's not a bad kid at heart. I smile. "She's better than okay. I can't forget my purpose here. When I was your age, I was really good at forging my mother's signature. For when I got a bad grade or something. Are you, by any chance, good at that?" She gives me an honest-to-God smile. "I'm excellent." "I'm only asking because I have to get the petition in later this morning, and I want to have as many signatures as possible. I'm sure it's something your mom would support. Why don't you just text her? Tell her you were the one at the door." I'm trying to think of some other way to trick Hope, which feels kind of wrong and dirty, but unavoidable. And that's when she says, "Have you already tried my uncle?" Chapter 36. It's not easy, biding your time, nerves jangling, everyone drinking except you, inhibitions being lowered, laughter becoming more bawdy and raucous, and you're just waiting. Just hoping you can finish this. Tonight. Watch your back. No, watch your front. Someone just might stab you in the heart. It was a new email address, another series of numbers. I forwarded it to the police, but they said it was untraceable. Big promised that he and Little would start interviewing my neighbors tomorrow, and that a squad car would drive by my house several times a day. So the threat is getting a little more real from their perspective. Then there are the other AV threats. Andy and openness. I'm upset with Doug for lying to me about where he was when he should have been at work, but I realize I haven't yet given him the chance to explain himself. It's not like I haven't kept secrets from him, after all. The reality is, people have affairs. They get caught up in things they shouldn't. It doesn't mean the relationship is irreparable. In Europe, they keep the family together and turn a blind eye. No, I don't think I could do that. But we could go to therapy. All the love we've had for each other doesn't just vanish in a puff of smoke. Marriage is not a magic trick. It's about putting in the time and the effort when things are hard. It's about tough conversations and forgiveness, isn't it? I want a drink so badly right now. Yet I have to be stone-cold sober if there's going to be any chance of turning the tables on them tonight. It's a smaller group than the last time. Yolanda won't be here. Andy's running late. June is dealing with some Hope-related emergency, but will arrive shortly. Now that I've met Hope, I wonder if all the stories about her are exaggerated or even made up entirely. If June just likes to have a ready-made excuse to rush off, maybe to be with her sugar daddy. I mean, obviously lying is in June's wheelhouse. Even her own daughter thinks so. That leaves Raquel, Gina, Tennyson, and me.
None of them questioned my decision to stick with club soda, and they've suspended the ban on talking about kids just for tonight, for me.
It must be hard for you to be away from Sadie, Raquel says. I remember Meadow got really sick one time, not sick enough to need the hospital, but we were on the fence about that. We almost took her to the ER. And when it was all over, I just wanted to hold her tight, like for days and days.
You think how it can all vanish in an instant, Gina says,
succinctly, unemotionally. She wants to get on to the next conversation, you can tell. Back to the fun. Even fun has to keep to a strict timetable. I tell them I don't mean to be a killjoy, and I'm sorry that I'm not myself. Not that they actually know me. They assure me it's absolutely fine.
You can't always be the life of the party, Tennyson says.
Then June/Ellen breezes in. She says, It's always so dark in here. It took me forever to find you guys. She kisses everyone on the cheek, including me. She takes the farthest seat and avoids looking at me. Her energy is off. She's already got a drink, a rum and coke from the looks of it, and as she sits down, she knocks it over. She's a bundle of nerves, clearly. I study her face for the first time since learning who she really is. It's amazing that I could ever have missed it. The changes now seem shockingly superficial. Just her nose and chin, and a thinner face, and auburn hair instead of dark brown, and bright blue contact lenses over her nutmeg irises. No one could blame her for wanting a new face and a new name, but once you really look, she's so fundamentally Ellen. Now I can see it in her mannerisms. It's unmistakable. And watching her, even knowing all I know, all she's capable of, something inside me gives way. This is Ellen, my best friend. I loved her deeply. She loved me, too. I know she did. Her father is the one who ruined everything. He brainwashed her, got her to think I was a liar, that all the kids were. And she thought I'd betrayed her family after they took me in and treated me like one of their own. Of all the awful parts, having to share every terrible detail on the stand chief among them, losing her was the worst. I didn't have a confidant through it all. But more than that, I didn't have anyone to take my mind off things and make me laugh. I didn't have anyone to just plain get me. But it never occurred to me that she'd become my enemy. A small part of me thought that one day she'd have to realize who her father really was, a wolf in sheep's clothing, the worst boogeyman of all because he was disguised as everyone's favorite teacher. But he also disguised himself as the best father. He stole my best friend from me, and he stole me from his own daughter. He told me he loved me, and I believed him. I didn't even think the things he was doing were wrong, not for the longest time. But I knew that it was a secret I was supposed to keep from everyone, including Ellen. She'd be jealous, he said. I'm hit by a wave of nausea. Leighton brought us here, pitted us against each other. We were just children. Damaged children who became damaged adults. We both feel like we have to fight for what's ours, fight for the families we've created. He made us loyal to him over each other. Now we're adversaries when we should be best friends. When we understand each other better than anyone, we're both victims. When she talked to me at the hospital, did she feel it too? That I'm still me, Katrina? Did she feel a connection? Did she ever waver in what she was trying to do? I feel like she had to. I want to believe her brother is her accomplice, and that he's the one who poisoned Sadie, and that Ellen didn't know, not until it was too late. There's just no way she's a good enough actress to have pulled off those tears at the hospital. She hated seeing Sadie in that state. I know she did. Or had Ellen actually tried to poison me? Could she really be her father's daughter after all? The conversation has been flowing all around us, bubbles on a champagne sea. But Ellen and I aren't a part of it. She's nursing her new drink, stirring it slowly. Her eyes are far away and full of pain. I'm probably her mirror image. Whatever I'm feeling, though, I'm going to finish this tonight. The boys show up together. Oliver, Nolan, Vic, and to everyone's surprise, Wyatt, who's looking grim. Bringing up the rear is Andy. Impossible as it seems, somehow, I'd forgotten about her just for a little while. The women protest flirtatiously. Nolan says, "We thought it would be fun to crash." But there's nothing fun in his delivery. His being here is intentional. It's deadly serious, and I have the feeling that it's about me. So I won't be confronting Ellen slash June alone. She called for reinforcements. I never really knew Ellen's brother, Mark. He was years older and always off playing sports. Back then, I didn't think he looked like his father, but he must, a little. I mean, that first night at Andy and Nolan's house, I saw some resemblance, sensed something. So Mark became Nolan, Ellen became June, and they both tried to start over in the AV where no one knew about their family's disgrace. Then I showed up. There are greetings all around. The boys are finding another table that they can carry over and put next to ours, and Andy is doing her rounds, her lips lightly grazing my cheek. That's what does it, what pulls me out of my grief-stricken inertia. Whatever's happening between her and Doug, she thinks she's untouchable. I need to take care of this and get out of here. This ends now. I'm on my feet, everyone looking up at me in surprise, except for two people who came prepared. Good thing I am, too. They don't know my secret weapon. "Could I talk to you outside?" I say, looking at June and Nolan. I'm so anxious that I can barely walk, but I can hear their steps behind me. I keep going, because this is for Sadie. If I don't take care of it, I'll live in fear, and that'll infect her. It'll be a poison that runs through our home. She's been poisoned enough for one lifetime. I don't remember the alley, but I must have retained some sense memory about where it is because my legs are carrying me toward the back of the bar and through an unmarked door. It's like I'm seeing it for the first time, though it's familiar enough from the picture. It's long and narrow, with a giant dumpster not quite 10 feet away. The night is breezy, and some garbage swirls by our feet. Straw wrappers, like snowflakes. Someone just might stab you in the heart. But not tonight. Not when everyone knows where I am and who I'm with. These two people have a lot to lose, and they're not stupid. Then why are they still sending emails when they know the police are investigating? Because they think they can get away with anything. Because they have loyalty to each other. Because whatever happens, they'll tell the same story. Someone once mentioned a safety net. Well, I've got one of my own. There's no backing out now. "Hi, Ellen. Long time no see," I say. She registers no surprise. She doesn't speak. "Let's start with why you put the ketamine in my drink," I dare her. Again, nothing. "Or was it you, Mark?" I ask, turning to Nolan. "I mean, I get it. I get why you wouldn't want me living next door to her and why you would want to protect your sister. It makes sense. But did you have to be so brutal?" "No one's done anything brutal," Ellen says. Nolan, Mark, gives her a quick look, from an older brother to a younger sister. He's telling her to keep quiet. "We don't know what you're talking about," Nolan says. "Deep in your heart," I say, "you know the truth." I'm talking to Ellen, to my friend. the one who knows me. You know the truth, she says hotly. Nolan steps forward and puts his arm around her, both support and restraint. I told the truth on the stand. I kept your father from victimizing anyone else.
He didn't victimize anyone, she says.
Nolan tries to intercede.
Listen, now you know who we are. We know who you are. Let's try to work this out like adults, not children. It's true. We don't want you in the neighborhood. It's very painful for June.
What about you? Ellen asks him. Isn't it painful for you, too? She ruined our family.
You buy a new house somewhere else, Nolan tells me, and I'll compensate you for the time and trouble.
You'll buy me off, you mean, I say. This I wasn't prepared for. They drug me. They poison my child. They terrorize me. And then we're just supposed to exchange some money and I'm on my way? There's no justice in that. And suddenly, I realize that's part of what I'm looking for. Justice. And acknowledgement. I told the truth. None of this was my fault. It never has been.
She doesn't deserve your money, Ellen says.
You need to hear this, I say. Both of you. You need to hear that your father seduced me, and I spent years believing I was complicit in it. That I was the one seducing him, because he taught me how to please him, and that's all I wanted to do.
Stop talking,
Ellen says, breathing heavily.
No, you need to hear me.
I even felt guilty for testifying. I felt disloyal. Isn't that how you felt, too? I'm talking to both of them, but looking at Ellen. She's looking back at me, desperate. Desperate not to believe me, but I can see the knowledge is dawning.
He nearly destroyed me, but he made you think I was the one doing it to him, doing it to your family. And hasn't he nearly destroyed you, too? He's the reason you were terrorizing me. That's not who you really are. You're a good person, Ellen. For you to do what you've been doing to me, even poisoning my child?
I would never poison a child. Ellen turns to Nolan triumphantly.
See? She's a liar.
I noticed he hasn't said a word, but he has gone pale. Someone poisoned Sadie, I say. Dr. Vreeland at Children's Hospital told me so. I can prove it to you. Please, Ellen, stop ignoring so much evidence. It's time to see the truth.
Suddenly, the door opens, and it's Andy. I thought maybe I should be a part of this conversation.
It doesn't have anything to do with you, Ellen says.
Elle, Nolan says gently. She already knows.
Ellen looks back and forth between them. She knows what?
Who Katrina is. What's been going on?
Ellen looks between them, disbelieving. She thought her brother had kept secrets from his own wife.
I'm his partner in every way, Andy says.
If you're his partner, why are you off fucking my husband? I ask.
Doug and I are friends, that's all.
I see that Nolan's lips are still pursed. He doesn't believe her any more than I do. Wyatt pushes the door and steps outside. He looks us all over. Hi, Nolan says casually, as if we were all just taking a breather from the fun inside.
Everything okay out here?
Wyatt asks, like he's in his official capacity.
Everything's fine, Andy says, cool as ever.
It's good you're here, I say. You can make the arrest.
Arrest? Andy laughs. No one's getting arrested.
These three, I gesture, are the ones who left the notes. They're also the ones who slipped ketamine in my drink and who tried to kill Sadie. It occurs to me that Andy should look shocked at what I've just said. That she should be saying no one poisoned anyone. That's crazy. Instead, she says,
Nolan and I had nothing to do with that. June tried to get us caught up in her vendetta.
Nolan turns to Andy. Turns on her.
Don't talk about my sister like that. She would never harm a child, and you know it.
It was you, I say to Andy. No, she shakes her head. I look at Nolan. He's gone.